spirit of reconciliation, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. I pay my respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples today. Welcome to Totally Lit, the podcast celebrating reading, writing and creating literature. I'm your host, Kai Garvey. Thank you for listening. Hello, lovely listeners. This week is Harmony Week, a week to celebrate the diversity in our community. My latest guest is Crystal Carocca, chatting about her book Giovanni, a children's story following Giovanni as he travels to Australia as a young Italian immigrant. What a great way for us to celebrate Harmony Week. Crystal is an author, editor, and lover of stories. She is proud to be an Australian Reads ambassador and brings a bookish background that spans literacy education, library management and curation, in-house publishing experience, and more to the craft of making books and the privilege of sharing them with readers. In 2022, Crystal was shortlisted for an ABIA award in the Rising Star of Australian Publishing category and regularly connects with fellow writers and book creators at industry conferences as both an editor and an author. I hope you enjoy our chat. Hi, Crystal. Welcome to Totally Lit.
Thank you so much for having me, Kai.
I'm so excited to meet you over the screen for the first time. You've been a lovely support to the kidlit industry and I'm always seeing your activities. So today I'd love to hear more about your latest release, Giovanni. Can you share the book with me?
Yeah, of course. Well, likewise, it is so nice to have some time to chat because we do see each other a lot out in socials, and thank you for everything that you do. More than happy to chat about Giovanni. In fact, yeah, every chance I get at the moment, I'm really happy to chat about this book because it is a very little known slice of Australian history. So it is wonderful to be able to share it. And I feel so grateful for all of the work that Rochelle and Margot have done to, you know, Rochelle, of course, from Wombat Books, to put this little slice of history into a book form and to be able to share it.
So we'll do a little shout-out. Hi, Wombat Books.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Rochelle over at Wombat and everyone at Wombat who's been so wonderful in bringing it all together. And Margot Davis, of course, right from the end papers, just, yeah, have a squeeze at Margot's work because it's so beautiful. Yes, this little slice of history, this little rescue mission that occurred in 1881 that I think even a lot of Italians probably don't know about. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our Italian migrants or people from migrant families with an Italian background in Australia usually associate Italian migration in the early 1900s and in particular 1950s. But there was a rescue mission that took place after some very unfortunate events in 1881, and my great-grandfather was on that ship. So Giovanni is a reimagining of that rescue mission and how we came to have our first Italian migrants here in 1881.
How did it feel getting such a personal story published from your own heritage?
Such a mixture of emotions. There were moments where I think it really hit home just how much tragedy actually happened on that voyage, how many lives were lost and how lucky the survivors actually were. And I had heard those stories many times growing up, but I don't think I really had to place, you know, myself or any of my family members through it, which I know sounds like a really odd thing. But part of why it hit me so much more is I had to find a way to reimagine that story and actually get it on the page and not have it be a dry non-fiction book. That was really important to me. I didn't want to write a reference book. I wanted to write a narrative. And in order to do that, I had to think about how to create the experience of that voyage. And because my great-grandfather was 4 years old as he travelled, I actually imagined my son, who is now 16, as a four-year-old through that experience. So suddenly I had this very, like, close connection with how it might have felt, how truly lucky they were. It made the story more emotional to me. And then I've had this funny sort of experience in that to create a book, you really have to put your editing hat on, and then you've got to put your, you know, okay, we've got to write teacher notes, you put that hat on. And so then I've had this strange, like, complete disassociation from the story as well. So it has at times felt very personal, and at other times I almost forget that, yes, this is very much, you know, something that's really close to home. And maybe part of that is because I've been very deliberate in saying all the way along, it's really not just our family story. This is representative of roughly 40 families that went through this, you know, this really horrible experience. And it's 40 surnames that put roots down in Australia right from that time back in 1881. And it is representative of a wider migrant experience as well. So yeah, it's got kind of strange. It's been like zooming out and zooming in and zooming out and zooming in, and I try not to get dizzy.
And so it's a story that's been passed down to you. Did you have to do any extra research to write the book as well, or did you just rely on the family memories?
It was both. So there are some common anecdotes throughout all of the surviving families. So we, you know, all of that, some of the really unusual things that we actually made, we had to make some choices around whether they'd be shown visually, whether we would have it in text. And it was all of these kind of murmurings that, you know, in particular, anyone who has a connection to New Italy Museum, who's involved in Heritage Days and maybe comes back and speaks with other descendants, will kind of pick up on a lot of those common stories, like some really unusual things. So I'll give you an example of one of them. When people talk about the conditions on the ship, so when descendants talk about the conditions of the ship and what their either parents, grandparents, great-grandparents lived through, one of these recurring ones was how they were duped into believing that there were sufficient supplies for them. Right. And they were duped in that, you know, these weren't silly people. They checked. The Italian government was also putting a lot of pressure on to make sure that this journey was going to be safe for the travellers. And so food was placed on the top of, like, tea chests, so old, you know, the way that boxes used to be packed on shipping vessels. And beneath it, there's these stories of logs and wood and things being wrapped up to then pass off as though there were sufficient supplies.
Wow.
When in fact these people were absolutely, at least a number of them were going to starve to death. And that's the reality of just how unscrupulous the person behind this tragedy actually was. And so these funny little murmurings, Kai, that descendants have all heard over the years, and kind of go, oh, you know the one about the wrapped wood in the box? Yeah, no, I've heard that story too. But all of these murmurings and family stories had to be substantiated. Yeah. So the New Italy Museum was a fantastic place for me as far as resources go. It does still, you know, hold position and hold place for so many facets of Italian history and Italian migration history. And they have this wonderful committee who are so supportive of any projects like this. There's also been some nonfiction resources that were done, you know, throughout the generations. As I said, there was some, you know, text for adults and narrative, you know, nonfiction references, but not narratives as such. So yeah, it was a lot of reading, it was a lot of studying, it was making sure that I had some deeper understanding of the historical context as well, and then pairing that with these family anecdotes and trying to find the narrative line to make sense of it all was kind of the task at hand.
And was there anything that you discovered about your own family or about your community that surprised you that you didn't know about before?
In terms of my family or the community, not so much. But in terms of, and I've sort of spoken about this a few times in these chats, the Marquis de Reis, so, and probably more so at the launches when I've had an opportunity to sort of unpack this book, that was the French nobleman behind this essentially people smuggling situation. And because I had heard of his name before and I had known that the Italians were duped, but I had really only known it from their perspective and from their eventual rescue mission, I hadn't looked into his shady passed before.
Right.
And so that was an interesting, that was an interesting line of research. And so I did learn some things about him and about, his other scams. It just, and it was really kind of heartbreaking, to be honest, because in doing so, I learned that probably in large part, the lost lives of this voyage could have been potentially avoided. You know, it was known. He was known as a shady fellow, and yet he got away with, this was his worst scam.
And how did you tread the line, because Giovanni is a children's book, of incorporating some of those terrible things into the book without it being too heavy?
Yeah, that was a really interesting process, and it's one that I think marinated for a long time, probably longer in my subconscious than I realized. I had approached some writing around this voyage a couple of times before, and I had approached it from an adult perspective. So I had looked at projects, like I'd sort of, written down the bones of potential novel ideas. And they never really fully formed, and I didn't have any sense of confidence that I was going to bring it to fruition, which is strange because a lot of the content really is suitable to an adult audience, and it really is something that I would love for more adults to know. But I had a visit, I think this must have been 2021, another visit to New Italy, and, just spent some time looking around the museum. I was with a friend of mine who wasn't familiar with the story, and that was really interesting because I had grown up knowing this. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't really understand the magnitude of what they went through from that outside perspective. Mm. And so to watch somebody else learn a little bit about that voyage and that rescue mission was really interesting. And when I started to think about the ages of my family's group on the ship, all of a sudden I just couldn't shake the idea of my son through that. It just, that was the part that made it really real. And for some reason I just got this image in my head. I think this was part of it too. When you'll understand what I mean, when you're writing, how it kind of comes in from so many different angles, and you think that there's one moment that makes the penny drop, but in fact maybe it was six. One of the things that certainly pushed me into writing this as a children's book was I saw a picture of my great-grandfather I hadn't seen before, and I saw the family likeness between him and my dad and my brothers and my son. So all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there's some similarities here, and I just got this really, really heavy hit of, oh wow, like really, this is a human person. And it just connected me through my son to it, and all of a sudden I just pulled out my scrapbook and I started writing it, and it was utterly through the four-year-old's perspective, and a lot of those heavier concepts and the really weighty stuff started to actually fall away. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it was really scant prose, and it was just a few lines, and it was just a few words, and a lot of the big concept stuff is now left for talks in schools anywhere from sort of grade 5 and 6, where they can handle a little bit more of the reality of the situation and some of the more maybe harder hitting factual moments. It was a really interesting project to play with.
And when you were doing your initial launches, you had the opportunity to come to the New Italy Museum and do a launch as well. And you got to meet some family members that you hadn't met before, is that right?
So I actually met descendants from many of the other family groups.
Oh, fantastic.
It was crazy. I understand that we're all like part of a big, wider, supportive, wonderful family-oriented community. I get that. I don't think I could have ever expected people to have travelled from as far as they did or to get behind the book the way that they did. New Italy Museum is on the sort of north coast of New South Wales. It's just near Woodburn. And people travelled from Brisbane, someone from Adelaide, someone from inland Queensland, because they know this story and they know that they have family members on this ship, and that's why they are here too. And yeah, I couldn't have expected that. I said to my parents, please like make it long so I know that I've got you two there. And I said, I think this will be, you know, it'll just be a couple of hours in the morning, because that's actually what we planned. I had amazing support from the ladies at New Italy, and we planned this event from 10 till 12. I'm like, it's a couple of hours, just like come along and see how we go. And it blew into this whole day thing, and I left at 3:30 in the afternoon. Yeah, it was amazing. It's a day that'll be, yeah, stuck in my mind for a long time.
I'm always amazed at what comes back to you when you put a story out into the world. It brings so many gifts back as well.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And stories too. That was another really beautiful thing about the day, is that people took time to stop and have a chat and share more of their family stories with me and then with each other. And you're exactly right, that energy that comes back. I think, you know, we're never sure what to expect when we leave, like our quiet little hidey holes, that's right. So yeah, that was a real treat.
Now, Harmony Week is coming up soon. Have you got any activities planned for Giovanni around Harmony Week?
I have a few things. I'm pretty busy into next week, and I'm talking with a range of student ages about creative writing, but also about Giovanni. So it's being used as a mentor text for several groups of students, and I'm thrilled about that. And that includes even some secondary groups at the moment, I think, because it's lending itself quite well as a scaffolding text. You can get from cover to cover nice and easily, but you can parallel those themes against other work that people are doing across different grades. So that's really lovely, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm just working on a little promotion as well for schools that either share a picture of Giovanni in their Harmony Week display or make a purchase of Giovanni through Harmony Week, and I will absolutely make sure I have all of the details of that coming your way,
Great,
and we can
I'll share
share that
those.
as well.
Can you tell me about Right Now Literary?
Yeah, sure. So that is the sort of umbrella brand under which I am freelancing or free ranging as a creative person at the moment. So I'm doing some freelance editing work and also mentoring. Mentoring's now making up sort of a larger and larger part of my week. And it's a space I really enjoy working. I absolutely love it. So working across a range of projects with a growing group of authors, anywhere from aspiring to published. And I love the variety that we're working on and the different stages that we're working on. And we're just, you know, hustling away on whatever's most important to them.
And your mentorship is called Right Here, Right Now, and that's available to explore on your website if people would like to get more information about it. And you'll also be at the CEA conference this year offering assessments, and you're running a boot camp as well. Do you want to share a little bit about that with us?
For sure. I'm actually going to head up to Brisbane this year for an in-person SEER, which I'm excited about. It will be the first time I've come up to join the SEER team in person. So I'll be doing a boot camp over that weekend. I'll be doing a presentation somewhere during the conference schedule to keep your eye out for, which will be all about just celebrating the process. How we build rejection resilience will be something I'm having a chat about. And I'm going to bring up a topic that I don't know how this is going to go, Kai. I just want to throw this conversation out into the mix and see what happens. But I'm going to be asking the question, should imposter syndrome go in the bin? And should we
Yes,
stop using
should definitely go in the
that
bin.
term? And how can we collectively put it there? What would that look like? So I'm going to have a chat about those things in a presentation at SEER, doing assessments as well across a whole range of things. People are probably most used to connecting with me around all of the gorgeous, bright, funny books that I've done over the time with Larrikin House. More than welcome to chat funny things, but also they'll notice this year anything around narrative nonfiction, historical fiction. It's such a passion area for me, so people can check out the different genres that I'm working with there.
Now, I've got a few quick fire questions to ask you so that listeners can get to know you a bit better. So I'll start with, what was your favourite book growing up?
Oh, that's such a hard question. Why do people think that's a rapid answer?
Pick only one.
See, that's the trick.
No, you can have as many favourites as you like.
Okay, I have, because you know my love for picture books, I'm going to share you my most damaged / well-loved picture book is this tiny little one called Honey Bears Go to the Zoo. It is just the tiniest little thing, and I read it over and over and over and over. And as a teenager looking for other branding,
oh, yes, that's
for
a great one.
Sure, very, very obvious reasons.
Okay, if you could be any book character, who would it be?
Oh, see, that's hard too. I don't know. Katniss Everdeen's
pretty
cool.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Yeah, what a resourceful chickie. Yeah? Yeah.
I'll take that
and
one.
Great with weapons.
Have you got a book that you're reading right now?
I have about 6 books that I'm reading right now. It's a problem. I need to stop starting so many all at once. Oh, I am pretty into Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I've just recently picked that up. I think that's the next one I'll finish.
Okay. If you could invite 5 literary people to dinner, who would they be?
Ooh. Oh, that's an interesting one. Dinner with a few literary folk. Let me think. That's really challenging. that's a really tough question.
They can be from the past as well, so if they're not around anymore, that's okay.
You know what? Here's how I would do that now, because you're right. From the past would be really interesting and amazing. I could probably also go to my Messenger app and find the most recent 5 people that we've been saying, hey, we need to catch up. Hey, we need to catch up.
Let's have coffee. And then it never happens.
I was going to start there, and then we're getting together for dinner. Yeah, I don't know. That's too tough.
All right, we'll move on to which Hogwarts house are you?
Oh, am I going to break your heart and tell you that I've never read any of the Harry Potter books? I've tried. It's not my jam.
Haven't seen the movies?
No, I've tried this as well. Yeah, I'm not a huge fantasy person. It's tough to maintain my attention through fantasy, and that will offend every Harry Potter fan ever of all time.
There was someone recently that told Harry Potter fans they need to grow up. So I think Miriam Margolyes, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but she's like, you're adults now, grow up. Sorry.
If I'm reaching my Miriam Margolyes stage of life, like that's a new level of just being probably offensive and brash.
Yeah, I do like a bit of Harry Potter. Right. So, but we all have things we love, and it doesn't just brings variety of life.
That's right.
Okay, a bit more of a you centered question. What advice would you give yourself if you could go back to the beginning of your writing career?
Not that long ago. You know what? I think I would let myself know that rest is a valuable thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I would say, because I have a tendency to sort of really jump boots and all into things, and that can be great, and working hard can be great, but I think it's taken a long time for me to value rest as a necessary part, not just of life and of staying well, but of staying creatively fueled too.
Yes.
Yeah, that it's not just, you know, grind on. I wish I valued it earlier. But I have learned the hard way, so
it is very important to recharge and to, from my experience, because I just have one little book out, and feeling that pace of, oh, I have to keep going because I have to stay present, because if I don't have another book out, I'll disappear and not be an author anymore, which is not true. It is just a cycle of the industry. in some ways, and but feeling like you have to be everywhere and doing everything to maintain a career.
100%. And do you know what though? And I think this is something we need to remind ourselves. But even as you say, it's because it's not one little book. If you backtracked maybe a couple of years before you had that book in your hand, you'd never think it was a tiny thing. You know, you'd never think it wasn't a huge kind of accumulation of your energy because you know how it feels to strive towards that first contract. And then all of a sudden, it's so tempting and so easy to compare ourselves to bigger things or more books or other stuff going on and immediately diminish where we are, and therefore, I think underestimate how much energy we're still really trying to cook with. And I think, you know, that ends up being a little bit of a trap for us creatively because you're like, oh, I'm barely doing anything.
And I think there's also a danger at what you were mentioning, imposter syndrome, before. Australians especially are, we try to be humble and downplay ourselves, and there is also a bit of tall poppy syndrome in there as well. And I am terrible at this. I will say, I just have a picture book, and then people go, you're published. That's not a little thing. And I wonder to myself how big the thing has to actually be before I say, oh, it's just a, rather than going, look
Good
at,
question to
and
ask yourself.
because it should be okay to feel proud and enjoy success, but I think what we find is that we downplay it all the time because we don't want to be seem to be in everybody's face all the time.
Yeah, and it's such a tough line to tread because you know that self-promotion goes with the territory. You are in so many ways just obligated to do it, and you want to have that energy and you want to do that task well while there is this other little voice in your head saying, "Oh, look at you back in people's faces." But as you said, being able to say you're proud of your work, I don't think it necessarily comes naturally to lots of us, but I think we have to be a little more deliberate with the use of that word. When I had the launch for The Naked Sheep, which was quite riotous and really just very fun and very silly, Adam Wallace came along and was generous enough to come along and co-host with me, and we did like a this reenactment of the book that I roped some people into, and we had wigs, and we had this really amazingly full group of people that came along for what was basically just a really silly fun party. And then all of a sudden, I caught myself in this moment because I was talking about what was coming next, and I had this little teaser to be able to show about Giovanni. And I could feel the words coming out of my mouth at the time, which was that I'm really proud of this book and I can't wait to share it with you. And when I caught myself saying it, I then kind of just stopped and went, you know what? I don't think we say that often enough as creative people. I think we stop ourselves often as women. I think we stop ourselves in various ways or for various reasons of saying, I'm really proud of this thing that I did and I want to share this with you. So I'm like, I'm going to keep saying this where I can, but I'm going to be practicing for me. I hope it's not, sounding really silly, but so many people messaged me after, and it was that little moment that they grabbed hold of and said, like, I'm so glad you put your foot down and said, there's a thing I'm really proud of and I want to share it. Because it is so challenging, and we're not all experts at it. We need to remind each
And
other, you know.
I think that is really pertinent for you to include, Etsia, about, yes, us just saying goodbye to imposter syndrome and just being proud of having something s successful.
You know what something that caught my mind, and I will be chatting about this at SEER as well, but I sort of caught myself with something recently, because you do, you have these up moments where energy's heading in the right direction, you feel really good and you're creating well and things are feeling like they're buzzing, and then you have your slopes down and you've got to, it's part of the job, but you've got to catch yourself there too and figure out how you get back up. And I just had this little moment where I realized, I was like, you know what? I owe this to 5 years ago me to just be really happy and really proud of things that are happening instead of wanting to chip away at and be self-critical about what I haven't done or, you know, where I, what didn't work out. You sort of just, if you go back, you could almost do this at any stage with creative stuff, but if you just dial back about 5 years and go, what do I owe to myself then about this moment? Because I've clearly worked to get here. It wasn't an accident, you know, and that's at any stage, you know, whether it's working on your writing, whether it's fronting up and submitting again, whether it's more development, whether it's holding the book in your hand, if you go back 5 years, you're like, I made a lot of deliberate choices to get here and I kept doing the thing. Yeah.
One thing I've found really good, networking and connecting with other authors has been really helpful to me in terms of hearing other people going through the process as well. So when you look at someone who's really successful and has lots of books out, and then you hear them say, oh, I got a rejection today, or I had this happen today, then you get an understanding of it's not just you that's going through that journey, that even when you've built your career and you're super successful, there's days when people say no still. So getting an understanding of how that, yeah, that resilience that you need to have when you're getting no's a lot, and some of it is just continuing to write well and submitting, and there'll be a yes somewhere along the way, and you just have to keep persisting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is refreshing for people to share, you know, the wider view of what we're all working with, because rejection does go with the territory. And I think the KidLit community in particular is very good at supporting one another. I think the connection opportunities are there. People will reach out. People will support each other's work. It's pretty phenomenal, really, when you sort of realise we're not a really huge industry for how impactful it actually is, you know, and how, I guess, open people are to supporting one another. You know, it doesn't feel competitive in the way you could assume it to be.
No,
it would be quite,
really,
you know what I mean? It would be quite,
yeah, very supportive. Like in Brisbane, I have a wonderful KidLit community here, and I'm very grateful for the support they give, and I hope you have that down where you are as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, by virtue of all of these, you know, social things that we're so connected with now through COVID, it feels like we're all sort of on the same team all of the time, even when we're not meeting in person. You know, we're all out there in those same spaces. And I can't think of another, you know, sort of area, whether it's creativity or, you know, a sport or anything, where the opportunities are really hard won and yet people are so supportive and so genuinely encouraging of each other to meet their goals and to just stay in the game with each other. And so I think we are quite lucky. We'd probably all be just a little bit more crazy.
Can you imagine? Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Crystal. I've really enjoyed hearing about Giovanni and some of your other activities, and everyone can check out your website to learn more about Right Now Literary. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for everything you do on this podcast and across KidLit Kai. It's been a delight.
I'm addicted. It's turned into an illness.
I think we all are.
Yeah, thank you. Totally Lit is an independent podcast. You can help support us to continue to chat with wonderful Australian creatives by leaving a review on iTunes or sharing our socials with your friends. You can also make a contribution at buymeacoffee.com/totallylit. This will also help with equipment and podcasting platform fees. I love to interact with our listeners, so feel free to say hello either by email or social media. You can email me at totallylitpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Facebook, Insta, LinkedIn and Twitter. I've created a group on Facebook called Totally Lit Writing Community. It's a space to continue the conversation and share your writing successes, events, launches and latest projects. Jump into the group and say hello. Thank you for listening to Totally Lit, and don't forget to go out into the world to read, write, create, ignite. Thank you.